Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's that time of the week. It's Doggy Pod time.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Doggy Pod. And I'm Dr. Rob Zammit with
producer Stephen Peters. And in this week's episode, we're going to talk about the pads on your dog's feet. What are they? How do they work? And can they actually wear them out?
Also, do dogs get epilepsy? I'll tell you all about that shortly.
And Dr. Rob is going to tell us all about the most expensive dog breed in the world.
Some people would say it sits in my backyard and I've spent a fortune on that dog.
Well, I think a lot of people would say that who know you, Rob. Yes, what is the most expensive breed to buy? And we have a celebrity dog this week we'll talk about. Now, this little dog is called Oscar and he's a Maltese Yorkie and he's owned by one of the most famous singers in the world. I know I've said that before. A singer who started out super cute as a teenage pop idol and ended up completely covered in tats, but I think he's still an idol. We'll tell you who that is and all about the Maltese Yorkie shortly. And in Dr. Rob's top five this week, he's going to tell us the top five breeds for affection. What are the most top five affectionate dog breeds in the world? Some dogs can be quite standoffish, while others, they just can't, you know, they just love to lick us from head to toe. Dr. Rob's going to give us the top five most affectionate dogs. That's all coming soon, later in the show. But let's talk briefly about what happened in the clinic this week, Rob.
I had a really big win with a dog. I was really happy. He came in.
What, at the greyhounds, you mean?
No, it wasn't racing any greyhounds.
Wasn't that kind of win, okay.
No. This dog came in a couple of months ago, Stephen. It's a Chow Chow.
And what's a Chow Chow?
A Chow Chow is a Chinese breed, very old Chinese breed. Mm. They are very, very hairy little dogs. And they have black tongues, known for their real blue or black tongues. They come in various colours, solid colours like reds or blacks and blues, but they used to be a guard dog and a fighting dog in China, but now they're just great pets.
How big are they?
Oh, they go, say, a bit border collie size, that sort of size.
Oh, okay.
But they're very, not a long dog, they're robust, real, built like a little tank, gorgeous little dogs. But they do get some problems. One of the problems they get, and other breeds get it as well, is a thing called entropion. It's where the eyelids roll in towards the eyeball. Entropion, now this dog came in because it had this weeping eyes, and had weeping eyes more or less since they got this dog, and it's been getting worse and worse. We saw it for the first time a couple of months ago. I had a look at it, and I could see the eyelids, the top lid, eyelid and the bottom eyelids of both eyes were rolling in, so the hair is touching your... Imagine your hair touching your eye all the time.
Touching the eyeball.
Instead of just one hair in your eye, and that's irritating enough, this is irritating all the time, can lead to severe ulceration of that clear part of your eye called the cornea, which, untreated, eventually could send you blind. So we had to do something about it. With entropion, we usually do a special surgery where you cut the skin and take away some skin and pull it down away from the eye. So you roll the eyelids back. But because he's so young, you don't know how much to take away. As he grows and the head expands, things will change.
Well, that's quite a tiny area. It sounds incredibly difficult.
It was. So what we did with this little dog, we knocked him out and we did what's called tacking, where we take part of a suture and put it near the eyelid itself, near the eyeball, and then pull it downwards on the bottom lid and suture it down further down the face onto his cheek. We do three or four of those on each lower lid, do the same on the top lids, and so what you're doing is you're forcing the eyelids away from the eyeball and the dog can see. And straight away, he went home, he could see, he wasn't discharging, he was happy.
I bet he was happy. He could see where he was going.
We took those sutures out because you can't leave them forever. Hmm. It's now 2 months down the track. We've been monitoring him every week. We took the sutures out and the eyelids have stayed that way. They haven't rolled back in. We're hoping to avoid the major surgery of entropion later on. We don't know if that'll work or not, but as his head's expanding, the eyelids have worked very well the way we've pulled them down. And so it was a big win. This poor dog, no longer suffering from entropion.
So the eyelids are kind of graft their way into his
head.
Yeah,
back into where they should be by being pulled down.
Yeah.
And we do a little nick on the very, what's called the lateral canthus, where the top lid meets the bottom lid right at the side. We do a little nick there to loosen it, pull it all down, pull it all up the top, and they've settled down into a nice proper eyelids that aren't irritating the eyeball anymore.
Good on him. What was his name, are you allowed to say?
Tank. Seriously, and he's built like it. He's built like a tank, he really is.
Good on you, Tank. Okay, let's talk about feet. Not our feet, but our dogs' feet, and in particular, the pads on the bottom of their feet.
Yeah, very, very important structure, Stephen, those pads. Really important.
I know that dogs, you know, I remember you telling me this in a previous episode, that dogs sweat through their
pads. Through their feet. And guess what? So do we.
Really?
We have more sweat glands in our feet than we do under our arms.
Well, that answers a few questions about people with smelly feet.
Stinky feet.
But with a dog, they have, you know, obviously have pads on their feet because they walk barefoot all the time.
Yep.
You know, tell us a bit about them and can they actually wear them out?
Oh, boy, can they wear them out?
Or can they cut them and the like?
Certainly they can cut it. That's a given. It's just tissue that can be cut on anything sharp. But also, if they're running on a concrete surface or a hard surface and stop fast, they can wear a big piece of pad out. Now, what is the pad? It's referred to as keratinized tissue, if you like, hardened tissue, really hard tissue. A bit like your nails is keratinized tissue. Your hair is keratinized tissue. The pads are keratinized
as well. Is it sensitive to them? Can they feel through it? Like if you tickle our feet, we laugh because they're even though the bottom of our feet are quite sensitive.
They've got nerves there. They have to, because if they damage it, you know, it looks like something's going to damage it, they move. In other words, if it's too hot, if you're walking on the hot road, move them off. And the pads are vitally important. It's like trying to walk on the road without soles if you damage your pads of your feet. They are literally the soles of their shoes, if you like. It's nice. And you want thick, spongy pads. You don't want them too hard because that will damage. They'll crack all the time. They've got to be supple enough, but they've got to be thick and stop the dog from feeling all the bad things, the heat and the rocks and everything else, so he can walk on. So how do you get hard pads, especially if the dog has a problem? If the dog's cut itself, it's no use stitching it because it's keratinized. You can't stitch your nail, for example, when you cut that. You can't stitch your hair together and you can't stitch the pad together. You can bring it together and hold it closed. Sometimes we'll put dressings on it while it's healing if it's very, very bad. But generally, they have to keratinize. They have to go hard again. And one of the best ways, it stings, it does sting, but it gets it harder faster, is just methylated spirits or any of the alcohol, any of the surgical spirits, that will harden the area very fast. That will help harden.
The dog won't be happy about that.
No, it stings, but it stings less each time. Mm. Yeah, put it on three or four times a day as you're putting it on each day, it stings less and less and less because you're hardening the tissues quickly for the dog.
But how do you know if your dog needs that?
Have a look. If the pads are pink, your dog's in trouble and you need to do something about it. Yeah. Okay. If the pads are very pink, they're usually softer. And the other thing to do is feed them some hair and nail tonic helps, believe it or not. It really helps with toughening pads. Gelatin, because if people eat a lot of gelatin, end up growing nails very fast. Put some gelatin crystals in your dog's food and it'll help its nails, but it also helps its pads. And when it gets really bad, talk to the vet because they have some stronger things that you can put on to strengthen the pads even faster.
Now, I saw a dog in the park the other day, a little dog, I think it was a... Yeah, I don't know. I'm not quite sure what it was, but it had little booties on.
Oh, yeah.
Little sort of look like rubber booties. What's the story there?
Oh, could be a couple of things for that. One, it may have damaged its feet somewhere and has bad pads. It may have walked on a surface where it's burnt or its feet. Caustic things can do it, of course.
Right.
People being over-enthusiastic with disinfectants even or bleachers can do it. Or it could be that the dog gets dermatitis of the feet. And so the grass it walks on is usually the cause of the dermatitis. So how do you stop any allergy? Remove the allergen. Putting boots on may have removed the contact between the feet and the grass, and so the dog doesn't get an allergy.
So it's not uncommon then?
Oh, allergies in their feet are very, very common. A lot of people say, oh, my dog's always licking at its feet when it comes home from the walk. Yeah, well, walk it on a different surface and you'll see it. But for dogs that do lick their feet a lot when they come home, means usually it's an allergy thing, I do get them to wipe it clean with surgical spirits or methylated spirits. Wipe the feet clean. Dogs don't like the smell of it, so they won't go licking it. It evaporates quickly, so they won't go drinking it, and it gets rid of the allergen.
I'm surprised dogs don't get more things caught in their feet. You know, when you think of all the fur there and the gaps between the pads and everything.
Yeah, there is fur there to protect, and they can get grass seeds in there and bits of stick, but they tend not to. The correct foot is very, the pads should be firm and tight together so things aren't prodding up there. It is amazing, isn't it, how they just don't get rocks caught up there.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah,
but they don't.
So should we get into the habit of checking our dog's feet and
pads?
Yeah,
if you've got long-coated dogs, you should really check all there all the time because they often get matted hair in between the toes. And that should be definitely, a groomer should be taking that matted hair away. Matted hair between the toes will cause a lot of lameness and problems and dermatitis and infections. So no matted hair between the toes. And always have a quick check of your dog. Yeah, when you're lying there on the lounge and the dog's beside you, lying with you, surely you allow your dog to do that now and then. That's a good time to just check the pads.
Okay, let's just briefly talk about something that I didn't know dogs could get, but apparently they can. Dr. Rob will tell us all about it, and that's epilepsy, if I can pronounce it properly. Epilepsy, so dogs can get epilepsy.
Oh, yeah. There's two reasons they can get epilepsy. The most common is hereditary, just heritable because they've picked up the genes that of epilepsy just like people do.
So they can have an epileptic fit just like a human can.
Yep. And in fact, in a breed called the Lagotto Romagnolo, it's an Italian truffle dog. They go hunting truffles.
They're
using them in Tasmania and Canberra for hunting truffles. Yeah, truffles per kilo are more expensive than gold.
Yes.
So they are being trained for that. This, the Lagotto has a DNA test for epilepsy.
Right.
So they can, when they're breeding it, they can check to see if it has the gene. If it does, you avoid breeding those dogs.
Is that because it's common in that breed?
Yeah, it was common in the breed and someone found the mutation, the DNA mutation, that causes that. Now, epilepsy, like in humans, there are many forms of it. When they have a seizure, they can have the full grand mal seizure where the dog's thrashing on the ground and they will urinate very often and defecate because they're putting a lot of motor output and the dog doesn't know where he is and salivating and then, you know, comes out of it okay, hopefully. They can go into status epilepticus where they don't come out of it. They keep on seizuring and you've got to get to the vet even while your dog's seizuring. But they're the grand mal seizures. There are petite mal seizures, in other words, not as big as that, not as grandiose, thankfully, as that. Mm. And some of these can be even as weird as tail chasing behaviour. dogs that just chase the tail, chase the tail, chase the tail, and never stop, that's a form often of epilepsy. And there are other types of, you know, in between all of those things that can happen. How do we treat it? Yes, there are, just like people. And in fact, I will use a lot of the human anti-epileptic tablets for treatment of dogs. There are specific ones that you can use for dogs as well, but it's up to your veterinarian to decide. The most difficult task is, how do you diagnose it? Because there's no test for it. You can't go to the vet and say, oh, I think my dog's epileptic, can you do a test?
Mm.
No, you can't. It's a diagnosis of exclusion. So the dog's had seizures. First thing we do is, let's find out, is he seizuring because he's toxic for some reason? So that your vet will do a blood screen. Your vet may do x-rays as well. They will check his heart, because epilepsy, or seizures rather, can come from your heart playing up. And lack of blood supply of the brain can bring on a seizure. So they'll check the heart. They check everything out first. And when you can't find anything, well, it's epilepsy. That's all we've got left. Mm. And you also do what's called a therapy trial. We'll see what response we get to treatment. The ideal drug for epilepsy causes no side effects and stops all seizures. And you know what that drug is?
Right.
Hasn't been invented.
Yes. Okay. So there's not right.
What you hope to do is decrease the number of seizures, decrease the intensity of the seizures, and minimize side effects. And that's up to your vet to decide how you go about that. Talk to your veterinarian. There's lots of things to do. But nearly all the drugs do affect the dog's liver. And so I like to put them on St. Mary's thistle, would you believe? It's just a herbal thing, but it really helps with liver toxicity. And so they're on daily doses of St. Mary's thistle along with their anti-epileptic medication. There you go, folks.
It is a mouthful, but it would be terrifying, I would think, awful, to watch your dog have a fit and not know what was going on.
Oh, the first time it happens, it is, because, you know, poisons can do it. Things like snail bait, snake bites can do it, brown snake bites. There's lots of other reasons your dog could seizure. And, of course, there's things like brain tumours in old dogs. They can bring on a seizure. Lots of reasons why a dog could seizure, and this is very frightening. The other thing we do once we establish a dog is an epileptic, we load some syringes with diazepam, which is Valium, and when the dog's having a seizure, they can squirt the diazepam up their bottoms. Sounds terrible, but it stops the seizures nearly straight away.
So during the seizure? How can you do that while a dog's having a seizure?
You're at the other end. You're not going to get bitten. Lift the tail up. They put the syringe in, squirt it in. I teach them how to do it, and vets will do that all the time.
Stops straight away.
It stops the seizure straight away, and then they can get back to the vet clinic if they need to, or decide what they're going to do with the vet.
So there you go. Don't freak out necessarily if your dog has a fit.
Epilepsy is something you live with, just like people live with it. You know, epileptic people have good, steady jobs. They play sports. They do all the things that anyone can do. It's just a matter of controlling it and being aware of it. And people around you will always be there to help should something happen.
All right. Have you ever wondered what's the most expensive dog breed in the world? I have, you know. You see some astronomic prices going for some dog breeds, particularly French bulldogs and the like, and those sorts of breeds. But is there one breed that generally is considered the most expensive breed you could ever buy?
I guess, there have been some big figures for dogs.
For individual dogs.
Individual dogs. One Chinese industrialist bought a Tibetan Mastiff for $1 million US. There was a greyhound many years ago. He's passed on now. Brett Lee. He was an Australian greyhound, obviously, with that name. And they virtually rejected the $1 million offer on him.
As a breeding dog.
Because he was a breeding dog, and he did so well, his progeny did well. So there have been individual dogs. And you do see that even nowadays, people will pay. German Shepherds in Germany, a lot of the people from China and Japan will go over there and spend $500,000 or I think there was a figure of €250 €250,000
for a German Shepherd.
For a German Shepherd. So you get these individual dogs, but generally speaking, across the board for puppies, at the moment, the one that's demanding the, or commanding the most money is the French Bulldogs. And
it is.
The,
wow,
the weird thing about that is like a pedigree French Bulldog that you could take out and show, probably about $5,000. However, people are doing these weird crosses and calling them pedigree French Bulldogs anyway and giving colours that you couldn't show.
Like the blue.
The blue, yeah, and charging. They're saying the rare blue ones are $10,000. Why, I don't know. Okay. And then there's the rarer long-coated French Bulldog and people are charging $15,000, $20,000 for a puppy. And I think, if that's what you want, if it turns out, you know, whatever, yeah, rows your boat.
They're a cute dog, there's no doubt about it.
Oh, they're gorgeous natured dogs. I think they rate in our affectionate dog breeds. But but there you go. We'll talk about that a bit later
on. Jumping ahead of ourselves,
I think
yeah,
they're probably at the moment because of popularity. And that's the thing that waxes and wanes is popularity of different breeds. And that worries me because when a breed becomes very popular, at the end of the day, when people think, oh, fed up with that, there are a lot of unwanted animals of that breed. Happened with Dalmatians years ago with the movie 101 Dalmatians. There were many collies running around years ago because of Lassie. And, wow, didn't everybody want Rin Tin Tin in their house? Mm. So it goes on. The popularity of a breed does wax and wane. When they're not wanted, that's what worries me. Then what happens to all these dogs?
Yeah. So generally speaking, though, the French Bulldog
I think it's about the most expensive breed across the board as puppies at the moment.
Okay, this week we're going to briefly talk. We have a celebrity dog this week. Yes, we haven't had one of these for a while. But if you can find a picture of this particular celebrity dog on the net, on Google, yeah, Google it, and he's a very cute little dog. Anyway, his name is Oscar, and he's a Maltese Yorkie, which is unusual, but...
very unusual breed because it doesn't exist, but it's a cross between the Maltese. Some people call them Maltese Terriers, and I keep saying they're not actually Terriers. They're just called Maltese. They're the white dogs.
Oh, so you don't call it a Maltese Terrier?
No, it's not a Maltese Terrier. It's just a Maltese. However, the Yorkshire Terrier is a Yorkshire Terrier.
Well, this celebrity dog, Oscar, is owned by none other than Justin Bieber and his partner, Hayley Baldwin.
Hmm.
Now, they've had this dog for a little while, and, yeah, Oscar is as cute as all get out. But... I mean, if you had a cross, Maltese and Yorkie, what would it be like? What sort of dog?
Well, it can be anything. Once you start crossing genes, you know, genetics knows no boundaries. They can do all sorts of weird and wonderful things. But Justin Bieber's little dog, Oscar, looks very much like he's taken on the English side of the channel in Yorkshire, where Yorkshire's started, the Yorkshire Terrier. He looks more like a Yorkshire Terrier than the European side, Maltese, in Malta.
It's as cute as all get out,
he's
this
very
Oscar.
Cute. So he's a little fawn-coloured, you know, tan-coloured dog with a gorgeous little black nose and big, beautiful eyes. I've got to tell you, he's really cute. And he looks a lot like a Yorkshire in that way. Yorkshire Terriers have these erect ears. Maltese have ears of the floppy, and he's got erect ears, just like a Yorkshire often has. So he looks more like a little and snazzy little dog. He's just gorgeous. You should actually, go to the web and have a look. Look up Oscar Bieber and you'll find hit images. You'll find a little photo of him. Very cute.
Okay, it's time now for Dr. Rob's top five this week. And I think he let one of the breeds out a minute ago.
Yeah, sort of.
But that is the top five breeds for affection. What dog breeds exhibit more affection than any other?
And how I've done this, Stephen, I think every dog should exhibit a lot of affection to its owner.
Yeah.
If it doesn't, there's something wrong with the dog.
Yeah. Or the owner.
Yeah, I mean, some dogs you think, but what dogs exhibit affection to strangers and what dogs especially exhibit affection to the veterinarian? Are they happy to come in and say hello to me? I mean, some dogs... they're licking me and I know they're just tasting, ready to have a go.
There are certain
breeds that are not so affectionate.
But I guess we're after the top five breeds that want to curl up in a little ball on your lap, watching TV, and will give you a little lick on the face. when you're looking a bit down, and will be really monitoring your moods and be there when you need them the most. So coming in at number five,
unusual,
is
the boxer. Uh-huh. I've only ever had one boxer that wanted to eat me. All the others are beautiful dogs that just are so affectionate. Boxers are very loving dogs, and yeah, they look rough and tough and everything, and they are good guard dogs, but only when they need to be. I think they discriminate, and they know when someone's nice, and I've never had a boxer that I would say doesn't want to come up and say hello to me or to any other stranger, and I'm stranger than anyone.
So number five is the boxer, coming in at number four.
Two cousins, the Old English Sheepdog and the Bearded Collie, and they are very, very loving dogs, and they don't want to sit on your lap. They want to sit inside you. They'll hop on the lounge and push their way almost inside your body. I think they are just very affectionate.
They can't get enough of you. Coming in at number three is
the Bulldogs. English, French, and the Pugs are in there as well, because I had to put them in. Pugs are very
lovely. You love your pug, I know.
Oh, he loves me and he loves everybody. He just, I've never found a pug that doesn't love everybody. They do love people. So English Bulldogs, French Bulldogs, Pugs, gorgeous dogs.
Coming in at number two,
the Labrador and his long-haired cousin, the Golden Retriever. They love their dog, love their owners, of course, but they also love everyone that gives them a moment's notice to say hello. Oh, they're up and about. You know, give them a little bit of food, and every Labrador will love you to death forever, but they are very loving dogs.
Labrador and Golden Retriever. Mm. So that just leaves one other breed. Coming in at number one, the most affectionate breed in the universe.
Yes, folks, and remember, Stephen only lets me say one breed, so I'm going to say the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel and the Cocker Spaniel and the Pekingese.
You do it to me every time. Actually three breeds.
Three breeds, but they are just so
loving. What were they again?
Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, the Cocker Spaniel, and the Pekingese will sit there and just
Pekingese.
Want...
Pekingese?
Pekingese are the only breed that have been bred to sit in people's laps. They're bred for that.
Right.
That's all they were bred for, sit in my lap and just... I'm happy. And you put the Pekingese in your lap, yep, it'll be happy. So there you go. Cavaliers, of course, we all know them. They just love everybody. And Cocker Spaniels, with those eyes, they look at you and, hello, how are you? And they have a bustling tail, Cocker Spaniels, that just whacks around saying hello to you.
So they are the breeds, for all you people out there that love a good cuddle, they're the dogs to get. Anyway, that's it for our show this week. We appreciate you listening. We hope you've learned something and enjoyed a bit of listening to us bang on for a little while. We will see you again next week on the Doggy Pod.
And for me, folks, the only reason dogs are ever naughty is because they've never been taught the correct behaviour by humans. But for me, they only have one fault. They tear my heart out because their lives are too short.
Yeah, true.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.